You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 361 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Thank you to all of you who tuned in to episode 360 with my wonderful wife, Alba Torres, last week. It's been the episode I think I've received the most feedback on, and for good reason. And as one of our great listeners out there, regular listeners and friend to the podcast said, she's way too smart for you. And yes, I think you're right. And on return of that, Alba said, oh yeah, your friend Sergio, he can come round for a meal anytime he wants. So there you go, Sergio. You have been invited round anytime you want for that brazen flattery that you cast, albeit rightly so, upon Alba for her appearance on the Columbia Calling podcast. This week's very special guest is Rafael Vargas, and he's one of the brains behind the Sudaca Cerveceria Artesanal, a Sudaca craft beer company, a craft beer company created here in Bogota some years ago, and of course experiencing all sorts of challenges right now in this time, but very interesting to talk to them. And during which this conversation, I will be sampling some of the beers. So let's just say that this episode 361 is sponsored by the Sudaca Beer Company. So check that out at sudaca.com. Thank you again to all of you who sponsor us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Columbia Calling. You've really made it a lot easier to make ends meet and indeed improve the podcast. As you can tell through this microphone, I've been able to pick up with your help. This year, I will be looking for a better mixer and, of course, to hopefully improve and update other parts of the podcast and make it, well, economically viable, let's say. So I'll leave you now in the capable hands of Emily Hart, and she'll be bringing you the newscast, as she does every week. Excellent job that she does for us from her base in Medellin. So thank you again to Emily. And we'll be back in segment three with Rafael Vargas of Sudaca Cerveceria, and you'll hear me enjoying an IPA and a stout whilst recording. So thank you again, and bye-bye.
I'm Emily Hart, and these are the top news stories for the week of the 1st of February, 2021. An important step in Colombia's peace process has now been taken. In a process known as Case 001, the Recognition Chamber of the War Crimes Tribunal, the HEP, has charged 8 former commanders of guerrilla group, the FARC, as those responsible for mass kidnapping, considered a crime against humanity. The HEP has been investigating the group regarding 8,000 kidnapping cases. Former commanders have already admitted that kidnapping, which initially targeted drug kingpins and presumed oligarchs, degenerated, and ultimately justified the kidnapping and hostage-taking of civilians. This is the first time the tribunal has presented charges that would lead to sanctions against FARC leadership. The accused have 30 days to accept or deny the charges against them. If they accept, they will be restricted to limited penalties under the terms of the peace agreement. If they do not accept, the case will continue and they could face prison sentences of up to 20 years. Hernando Giraldo, a former leader of the ultra-right-wing paramilitary group, the AUC, has been returned to Colombia after serving 12 years in prison in the USA for drug trafficking. Here in Colombia, he faces charges of murder, rape of minors, forced disappearance and armed displacement, 336 war crimes in total. And in other legal news, closing arguments have begun in the trial of Santiago Uribe, brother of former President Álvaro Uribe, for allegedly forming the paramilitary group Los Doce Apóstoles, and for the alleged murder of a bus driver in Antioquia in 1994. The prosecutor has asked that Santiago Uribe also be convicted of aggregated homicide as perpetrated by proxy of various murders committed by the paramilitary group. The group is accused of 500 murders of those they considered to be guerrilla supporters, as well as carrying out so-called social cleansing. And bad news for protest this week, as the ban on the use of tear gas against demonstrators has been lifted. The court declared the use of the chemical gas a proportional and legitimate means to re-establish rights and public order. This ruling comes in this same week that a riot police officer was convicted for the murder of a young protester who died after being hit in the head with a tear gas canister in 2005. The police officer fired the tear gas directly into the crowd, not an uncommon practice in Colombia. There are numerous other trials underway for similar actions by members of Colombia's law enforcement. And in coronavirus news, case numbers in Colombia continue to fall, currently at around 8,000 new cases per day, dropped from a peak of 18,000 cases in mid-January. The country has now registered more than 2 million cases overall, with 54,000 deaths in a population of 50 million people. A state of emergency has, however, been declared in the Amazonas region, as the Brazilian mutation of the virus has been detected there. Also this week, Colombia's Minister of Defense, Carlos Olmes Trujillo, and National Union leader, Julio Roberto Gomez, were killed by the disease. Despite confusion and concern about transparency of contracting, President Iván Duque has announced that mass vaccination will start on the 20th of February. Those were this week's top stories. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling, episode 361 of the Colombia Calling podcast. My name is Richard McCall, and we are talking this week to Rafael Vargas from Sudaca. Sudaca is a craft beer company startup here in Bogota. He came to us, and I think it's very cool that we get to talk about someone's business and someone doing something interesting here in Bogota. But of course, something's happened this year. Something that happened last year. But we're going to talk about that as we go along. And let me just say thank you so much, Rafael, for agreeing to come on the Colombia Calling podcast.
Thank you, Richard, for having us. And it's a pleasure to be here with you and talk to you and your audience.
Perfect. So, Rafael, let's start with you. You're a Bogotano. You are born and raised in Bogota.
I was born in Cali, but I was raised most of my life here in Bogota, yes.
Okay, and so you saw the need, obviously, some years ago, like the craft beer revolution, let's say, taking hold in, I guess, places like Austin and Seattle and San Diego and places up in the U.S. And all that we had here, beyond, obviously, Bavaria's monstrous beer company or so on, all that we had here was the Bogota Beer Company, which for a while was, of course, palatable and the one we would drink because there was nothing else. So then we started seeing other beers popping up here and there. Over time, more and more have come up. I mean, you go into, let's say, I don't know, what's it called, Gourmet Center or somewhere like that, and it's amazing. It's incredible to see the offer of craft beer made in Colombia. Now, to the top of my head, I can't remember any, but I have spoken to someone who helps put together La Roja, so the Fox beer or the X-Fox beer. I still haven't tried that either, but, you know, things have gotten away. But you created Sudaca, and, of course, that's Sudamericana, right, for abbreviated. Tell us a little bit about how it all came about.
Well, we started out around 2016. Our brewmaster, Juan Carlos, he worked in Leeds in Richside Brewery. He's a Colombian. He's here from Bogota, born and raised. And he was in the UK mainly because his wife was working and was pursuing a doctorate degree. Mm-hmm. And once they finished, they came back to Colombia. And well, he started to do all the information gathering to start a brewery here. He got all this experience. He got all the know-how from the traditional British brewing scene, which was, to be honest, is still very new to everybody here in Colombia. So the main goal from the beginning was to bring all that knowledge, start developing some quality beers here. Mm-hmm. And then try to get the brand growing and try to get the brewery growing. I myself joined last year. I'm a business administrator. Mm-hmm. I kind of joined to help on the business side of things and try to get the brand growing and the company set up and organized. But we've been, like you mentioned, we've been struggling with last year. But our brand hopefully wants to bring that know-how, bring that expertise, and try to develop new flavors, new offerings. Like you mentioned, there are around 250 breweries now in Colombia. Here in Bogota, around 160 something. Mm-hmm. So the scene is growing, but we're still less than 2%.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of market growth potentially that we want to be a part of. So that's why we're trying to join the scene, have these conversations, and try to reach more people.
Well, of course, it was all going incredibly well until something occurred. But so tell us a little bit, because you know what I'm interested in is it's very difficult to open up a business of this type in Colombia, I think, not only with the Invima, which is sort of it's the official body to allow food and drink. I guess it's the Food and Drink Administration or so. Yeah, and also, beyond that, the bottling companies here, don't they belong to one family that kind of owns everything in Colombia?
Yeah, all the bottling industry is owned by Peldar, mm-hmm. which is a company. They essentially have a monopoly in the entire country. So everybody buys from them, and we kind of have to adjust to whatever they demand.
Yeah.
And in our case, for example, we have to go through distributors because we are not large enough to even have a batch of their production. So prices are high. And the entire process to get set up is really tough.
Yeah.
We had some help from this government because there's a new law that's come into place this year that allows us to manufacture several types of beer with just one Invima approval, which is a breath of fresh air because we had to go through the entire process for each beer. So that helps a little bit, but the entire experience of just getting the factory set up and getting all the raw materials is really tough because we basically import everything, right? Yeah. Nothing is made here in Colombia.
And so it wasn't Juan Carlos, your brewmaster, smuggling hops over from the UK, you know, under the noses of the FDA. So you have several beers, IPA, stout, pale ale. What else do you have? I've seen them on the website, but...
We have the traditionals, the IPAs, the pale ale, and the stout. On top of that, we have a Kolsch, which is a typical blonde beer from the Kolsch region in Germany, which is really soft and kind of lagery, but it's an ale.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seasonals. Up till now, we've had Alt beer as a seasonal, which had a really good response last year, which is also from a German region and German style. And but I would guess that our two main our best sellers are the IPA and the Kolsch.
Well, my favorite of all beers is the IPA, and a little bit later in the show I'm going to be trying them because very kindly Raphael sent me a six pack of six bottles of beer, the stouts and the IPA. Now, but tell us about
the IPA is the most famous beer style in the world right now, right? Even more, well, apart from the lagers, all the big industrial manufacturers, it's the largest.
Yeah. And so you came in as the business administrator. You came in to make sure the books are okay and make sure that it's run properly. Who came up with the name Sudaca?
We are three owners. The name came about for the first two owners that are Juan Carlos and Felipe.
Mm-hmm.
They came out with the name Sudaca, like I mentioned, as the brand of trying to reference Latin pride, which is a common feeling that all Latin Americans have, and kind of trying to prove this mantra that Latin Americans can make good beer and we can do it.
Yeah.
And with all the expertise, all the know-how, all the development of the new techniques here,
mm-hmm.
we've been able to put out a pretty good beer and try to live up to that name. So that's the idea of the brand.
Sudaca Sudamericana. I want to sing. Who's the artist? Is it? We are Sudamericana Rockers. Who sings that?
Sudamerican Rockers, Los Prisioneros.
Yeah, I just want to sing that when I see Sudaca.
Yeah, it's kind of related to the whole Sudaca feeling. Is this feeling of independence and pride and guerrero. Yeah. I don't know how you say that in English, but
like a warrior.
Like prevails against the odds and all that kind of feelings. That it's really common to all of us Latin Americans.
Yeah, it's true. It's this something I talk about, and I actually study a lot. Is this the search for an identity in this? A post-Hispanic, let's say, empire, post-colonial thing, and so on. But let's not get into that. But you, Sudaca, you've tried to, and of course, Sudaca, you're taking it positively. In somewhere in Europe or in Spain, someone could say, "Ah, it's the Sudacos." It's a very negative term. You know,
it used to be a really negative term. It was like a derogative term that the Spaniards actually used to. Tell any Latin American who went to Europe, they called us Sudaca.
And
it was kind of, I don't know how the British and the French call each other, but I would guess it's something similar, that when you don't like somebody who's visiting. Well, it comes from that, but obviously the relationship has changed a lot in the last years, but that's the origin of the word.
Well, just, I mean, I know that most people out there will know. We're the horse beef or the roast beef to the French, and they're the frogs. Because they eat the frog legs. I think it's good to reclaim the word, reclaim the term Sudaca. And it's an attractive name on a beer. And I'm going to hold these up so you can see. Look, there you are. Sudaca Stout. You've got your Frailejones, unique to Colombia. I guess a beautiful raven-haired Colombian girl. What is the deal with the sort of clouded-out face?
Well, the idea behind the faces on the branding is like in sync with the brand name, and the idea is kind of trying to, like, coming out of nowhere, like from an incognito state, this comes out. So that's the idea behind that like the coverage of the faces in the bottles.
Because you've got this one on the IPA as well, the fingerprint right there on the blonde. And what else have we got up here? It's got a hummingbird.
This is traditional,
hummingbird. Very nice.
So we're trying to relate local stuff, traditional to Colombia, to that revolution that we're trying to start.
Revolution. I like it. Now, you are doing really well. You have the tap room in San Felipe, which is a very hip district, you know. You're just between, let's say, the north, El Polo, and San Felipe, the south, I would say, is the Agosto. And it's been a really hip area in the last, I would say, 6-7 years. It's been coming into its own. A lot of graffiti artists getting big space for their galleries. I know some friends who've got galleries down there, and you started seeing they were doing these San Felipe, Open San Felipe.
Open San Felipe.
So people could come down, with their kids, and there's always some music on and interesting things. So it sounds to me like a perfect place for a craft beer startup. And I guess you were incredibly popular there with the tap room.
For a while. I mean, we started here in December of last year. Uh-huh. So we've only been open here in San Felipe for 4 months.
Ah, okay.
And then the pandemic hit. But you're right. You're absolutely right about the district. The San Felipe is really perfect for our scene. There's not many bars or beer offerings here. There's a couple only.
Mm.
And like you said, it has been growing. There's a lot of traffic of art district and galleries and all kinds of artists coming to the district to see the art. But obviously we hope they also stop for a beer.
Yeah, definitely. No, I could see it being a real hit. I get that feeling it's a bit more, you know, you're pushing out there, like in New York when it pushed out to Williamsburg and things, but a long time ago. But there were, I've been to a few things and art events down there, and sometimes, you know, I'm in my 40s. I feel so old and so uncool, I have to say, you know, carrying around my kid, making sure he's not knocking over some priceless piece of art. And so I just feel, I think I would rather duck into a tap room and sit in a corner and just not be spotted, because some of the places are too painfully cool. But that's all right. And of course, the artists and everyone else moved down there because of the space. You could get more bang for your buck. Now, of course, it's gentrifying and it's really expensive to get hold of.
It's getting more expensive. And, the entire district has been getting so much attention. Yeah. There's a lot of people wanting to move in. And there's even now local, old people who used to live here for a long time that are kind of protesting the whole scene.
It happens.
But here is a minority, because it's bringing also a lot of development and also a lot of revenue for all the local businesses here in the district. So it's a win-win, in my opinion. And we are trying also to tap into that. We have some art from some people here in our tap room, and we hope to also maybe be a platform for new artists that want to have an event or anything here in the district. We're open to that as well.
Well, you see, I don't, you know, I have my issues on gentrification, and I've studied a lot, and there is a compassionate way about including the traditional long-term communities into these things, and I think that's one thing. But for the location of San Felipe and its proximity to other incredibly high-rent areas of Bogota, I don't see it as the most damaging, let's say, movement. If you were, for example, to take downtown Bogota, where they're doing all of the economía naranja, orange economy, and trying to push out the traditional communities in La Estanzuela to, you know, value the property more, that I have an issue with, because there is a real attempt at pushing out traditional communities. San Felipe is right pegged to Chapinero, I mean, and then La Cabrera and all the others, which is, you know, we're looking at. Yeah, proper.
When you think about it, most of the galleries opened up in houses that were up for sale anyway, right? Yeah. So, and for example, our tap room used to be a car garage. and we remodeled it, but it's not like I have not heard of a large mass of residents having to deal with this yet. Mm. But there's definitely the idea out there.
So you're in the tap room right now, what we can see if you're watching this online.
Yes, I am.
The artwork in the back. Aquí nadie tiene corona.
Yes. Very good. And there's actually from local graffiti artists that we came to know about here in the district, and they were kind enough to give it to us, and we hang it on the wall.
Nice. So, and then you opened another one. You had another bar up in Chapineros, which was on the 56 with Cuarta, so in a real hub of, let's say, experimental and award-winning restaurants. You're up there with Salvo Patria. You're not far from Mesa Franca. Was it Insurgentes, the taco place?
Villanos
in Bermudas. All of these great places. You know, there was a real movement, and I bet that was booming up there.
Yes, well, that part got started around September last year,
2019.
And like you said, it was booming. I mean, we nearly tripled our beer sales with that bar, and we basically had it open only for 3 months.
Yeah.
But those were the best 3 months we've ever had. So it was definitely working, and we were sad to hit the pandemic, and sadly we had to close it. But it was definitely the spot, because there's not much in offering regarding beers and bars in that area.
Yeah.
And we thought we kind of hit the jackpot, but it didn't turn out.
We've all been there. Those of us who are somewhat entrepreneurial in spirit have all been very harmed in this situation. And I have to ask you then, if the pandemic has hit and is you know, really knocked your business sideways, how do you feel it will, you know, where do you see an upturn? Do you see an upturn? Do you see it coming back to normal?
Well, in all honesty, I'm a business person, and I kind of know that the market is still going to be there. Mm-hmm. We're actually more worried about when this is actually going to be done, because most of us, I think all of us, were operating under the idea that maybe January, February, things were going to be much easier, and it turned out to be the contrary. Yeah. So I think we are going to be able to survive, but we're surviving on online sales,
yeah,
which we kind of started in October due to the pandemic. We used to not have online sales. We just did taproom sales and person-to-person sales. So we opened the online channel, and we're trying to get it to work. Mm-hmm. And it's been relatively, like, not great, but it's been stable and it's been paying some bills. But no doubt we're still struggling.
It allows you to continue to brew, I think. Now, the online sales, for those of you interested, that's sudaka.com.
Yep.
Sudaka.com, as you think. So let's get on to the part that I've been waiting for. And I've had these beers in my possession for several days and have not cracked them open because I've wanted to try them here. So I'm going to start with the stout. Do I put it this way? Do I pour it tilted? Okay, good. Let's try that. I'm going to try not to get too tipsy because, you know, mid-afternoon drinking. And then I've got to look after my children again. So we've got the stout here. Good colour. I could also pass it off as a Coca-Cola. If I wanted to.
No, it's a little bit more dark brown.
But no, far enough away, people could think, oh, no, it's all right. Richard's enjoying a Coca-Cola. Let's have a try. Hang on a second. That's good. And it's got that kind of, I want to say, coffee consistency that a stout should have. So your brewmaster was completely responsible for this one, for the stout.
Yeah, 100%. We kind of decided on the stout, all three of us, and he put it together. And like you said, it's based on the roasted barley that brings out the coffee and dark chocolate scent.
Yeah.
And it came out really good.
Yeah, so you've got that coffee to begin with, and then it's the dark chocolate when it's down here. I can feel it. It's good. Very nice. Okay, one more sip of this. Mm-hmm. And now, fortunately, I have another glass. I'm going to try the IPA, which is ordinarily my favorite. So let's try this bad boy. There we go. Good color. Like the honey color. Dark honey color. There we go. See? There you
amber
are.
Honey, yeah. Amber, yeah.
Nice, try not to spill it on my computer. Hang on. It's got the hoppy smell to lead in with. Hang on. I like that. And it's refreshing too.
Yeah, and it's got some citrus and fruity aromas in the back.
Definitely. There's definitely citrus in there. And this would be my beer of choice. I would try each one of them if I was there. So I'd try all six or seven that you've got, and then I'd go back to the one I like the most.
So, yeah, okay. No, I personally also I am an IPA guy, but the two that you have there are really, really good, and like our intention is to make really flavorful beers, but that are easy to drink, that kind of what you guys call sessionable.
you can
have a couple and you're not going to feel all full up. Because we found out in like the Colombian market, it's not really, I don't think it's really ready for the really hard and high alcohol beers.
No.
They tend not to do very well.
Mm.
So we're kind of tapping into that, the easy to drink sessionable, but also keeping the flavor from the traditional style.
Yeah, so these are all 5%.
Yeah, we keep them all at 5.
Yeah.
Precisely because of that, to make them stick within that drinkability parameter that we want.
Well, that's it. There used to be a strong one here. Was it called Brava or something? It wasn't very nice.
It was called Brava, and it was not really good.
It was designed for students to get drunk quicker, I think. It wasn't very good.
Yeah, it was actually by the time I was in the university, and it did exactly just that. It wasn't tasteful, it wasn't refreshing, it was...
It's a get, as we were saying in English, get pissed quick, the GPQ. Now, in the tap room, because you're still there, although you're not open, and you will be open soon, because we're going to keep positive on this one, and I'll get down there. Do you offer food as well? Do you have, like, bar eats or something?
Yeah. Well, when we were open in January and February here, we had a menu, we had choripanes and like kind of easy to go menu, not any restaurant style menu. But we shut that down, and right now we're in the process of setting up a new menu that we hope to have ready to when we have to open.
It's interesting to know when it's going to happen at the moment, because I mean, you know, we're wading through day by day here, and we're not getting a straight answer from the health minister. End of February, and then. You know, we're recording this on a Wednesday and on a Tuesday, in fact. And the news that comes out is that there's still negotiations for the vaccine. So I don't see anything changing until, you know, we start getting people vaccinated and there's more of a herd immunity. Or basically, we're all immune, but we're all having had it by then.
Well, we're hoping that it's soon. Well, I'm not very judgmental about the government because I would think they have the roughest of years they had in a while, because this has been really hard for everybody, right?
Yes.
But it is kind of sad that there are a lot of equivalent countries to us that are already started vaccinating and we still haven't. So I guess that is frustrating, but I know we're going to get into it and maybe this can get accelerated somehow.
Yeah,
definitely. We're looking forward to it because we want to open our tap room. We want to have people here again. It's a great place, and we hope we can do it soon.
It's a sad feeling, isn't it? A bar that's empty, and there's not the sound of laughter and clinking glasses and the music. Hang on a second. You obviously have music on, but it's on at not at Colombian levels. It's on at a regular level, so people can talk.
It's a regular level. We keep it not as low as you would think, but yeah, you can talk, and we actually pay a lot of attention to that. You can sit down and have a conversation, but still hear the music, because the music is part of the branding of the tap room here. Because we want to promote new Latin bands and have that kind of music that is noticed.
So give me an idea of the music played, because I'm obviously very uncool. You're in San Felipe. I won't have heard of it, but if I can pretend to be cool to my 5-year-old, then it's all a good thing.
No, but I think I'm sure that it's most of the bands you already know, like Choquita and Monsieur Periné and those kind of new bands that are coming into the scene. There's a really, really good new band that is called La Boa that we play some of them, some other things here, and some of their local rappers, Sudaka. There's a rapper called Sudaka that we obviously called and play some of the stuff. And yeah, we kind of try to encourage and promote that kind of music.
Excellent. I like that. You know, it just sounds like a sort of place I'd love to sit down and you know, chew the fat with some friends over a few beers. You know, not too many, just, you know, a couple and enjoy of a Friday, Saturday afternoon. But so let's put ourselves beyond, if it's possible, beyond the pandemic situation. We've come out the other side. Whoops, excuse me. We've come out the other side. What's the plan for Sudaka? I mean, world domination, Colombian domination.
No, well, to be honest, our goals are pretty set already. We are going to launch around 5 to 6 new styles this year, we hope. We're going to grow our online business, and we're obviously want to grow our taproom sales once it's possible. And once we have enough, we'll reactivate enough, we're going to start looking into other cities in Colombia, trying to get people to know us in Cali and Medellin and in Barranquilla. There's a lot of bars there that we're already in contact with that we hope to be there soon also. And who knows, maybe in the future we'll open another bar. We have the experience of the last bar we opened. It was a really good one. So maybe when everything is up and running again, we can start that also.
Well, I think this comes back to the name. It's not a Bogota-centric name, Sudaca. It's an all-encompassing name. And therefore, you won't deal with the regionalisms that take place in Colombia. Like if you try to open up as a Bogota thing in Medellin, as the main
rival. Yeah, I heard Bogota Beer Company was not very well received in Barranquilla. That's a story I heard of.
That's fine.
But yeah, our brand is not local to only Bogota. Our name and our entire message really aspires to any Latin American. No, we're not just in Bogota.
Quite forward-thinking, therefore. I think you can go beyond Colombia's frontiers with a name like that. And please tell me you've copyrighted the name so that you're not going to be in trouble further down the line. Listen, I've almost finished my IPA. And I like the stout. I always enjoy a stout, but this is my favorite tipple here. Lagers are just a bit too, I think... I don't know. I haven't tried it, yours, but it's a bit. There was a little bit too wishy-washy. I need to be in the real heat to drink a lager.
No, well, we don't have the lager because the lager is an entire different process.
Okay, right?
We don't even have the equipment to make a lager.
Okay.
We do ale style beers only, and precisely the Kolsch. We made that Kolsch trying to tap into that lager market, but by offering a beer that has all this additional flavor and this additional experience that a traditional lager doesn't have. Because, here in Colombia, we've only been exposed to lagers, sadly, for around 100 years.
Forever.
So we use that style that it's kind of similar, but it got all this additional flavoring and all this additional aromas that can kind of... make the Colombian public know a little bit more about the beers and trying to get more interesting.
Excellent. Well, let me say thank you so much, first of all, for sending me the beers. You will forever be in my heart for that, ever in my debt. And thank you for getting in touch and coming on the podcast to talk about this business, which is exciting, and it will improve. You're a business administrator, you know economics. It will improve again, and I'm sure that the online sales will continue to increase as people look to help and to back small enterprises, because it is happening more, you know, people are understanding. The huge companies are always going to be okay, but the smaller ones, the local ones need your backing. So everyone out there, I'm calling upon you to go to sudaca.com, those of you in Colombia, to buy the beer, support a small enterprise here in Bogota, which will expand to the rest of the country. And you heard it from Rafael Vargas, things are going to improve. They will open bars, they will send the beer and stock it in bars in Medellin and Cali and other places. It will happen. I think that's what we need to remember. These are bleak times, but we stay busy in the hope of coming out on the other side, in the knowledge that we're going to come out on the other side. So thank you again for your time and of course, for sharing with us the whole story of how this Sudaca craft beer company came about.
Now, Richard, I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk to you and your audience. For us, it's an amazing platform for getting people to know us and trying to grow our community. Because like you mentioned, craft beer is all about community and people getting to know us and people getting to support us. and try to help us grow, because we're going to try to help everybody around us also.
Exactly, and it's the community, as you say. So I'll take this moment to say thank you so much to Rafael Vargas of the Sudaca Cervecerias, the Sudaca Craft Beer Company. Check out the website again, that's sudaca.com, S-U-D-A-C-A, sudaca.com. The IPA is my favorite, if you want to send me some. Of course, you can back us as well on the Patreon campaign for as little as $2 a month. That's patreon.com, Columbia Calling. There's all sorts of goodies on there for the longer that you back us for. We've been talking here, again, as I said, Sudaca. Next week, we're going to be speaking to Tom Gatehouse of the Latin America Bureau. He's a researcher and an investigator. He's writing the book about mining in Latin America, and we're dealing with mining in Colombia. And we'll be talking about that, the book that comes out in spring of 2022. But thank you again to Rafael Vargas. Thank you to all of you out there listening or watching now. And we'll be back, as I said, next week. So I've been Richard McCall, and this has been episode 361.